We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Can I talk football here for a minute?
Dave Wannstedt.
Dave Wannstedt has guided his Bears to the playoff, and he knows what it takes to succeed.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here, and Dave Wannstedt, there's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
A superb game plan defensively by the Miami Hurricanes.
The party has begun in Miami.
Super Bowl champion.
They swarm to the ball so incredibly. This speed burning defense, number one in the NFL. Dave Wannstedt, the defensive coordinator.
Football analyst for Fox Sports and NBC Sports Chicago.
I don't know if anybody asked, how can you bet against Tom Brady?
I'll bet you against Tom Brady. I'll do it. I'm happy.
What do you owe me? How many bottles do you owe me now?
It's confusing.
Dave Wannstedt.
You guys want to hear something funny?
When I'm coaching, right, everyone's calling me a moron. Now I get a microphone in front of me, everyone calls me an expert.
With Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
He said he had time for us anytime this offseason unless he was doing something. He texted the other day that he missed the show, and he said he'll come on when there's news. Well, the Bears have re-signed Ryan Nall, according to a reporter none of us have heard of. That's got to be enough news to get Dave Wannstedt on the phone by way of the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. Dave, how you doing today, my friend?
I am doing great, and I'm actually doing something, but I'm still coming on. So I've broken one of my rules already for you two guys. So think
and
about
I'm
that.
And I'm always available unless I'm doing something.
What are you doing?
I'm doing something. I'm in the car. I'm in the car going somewhere. That's what I'm doing. I'll tell you what. I'm excited about them signing Dahl because he's a blocker. He's a fullback. That you don't sign him unless you're planning on running the ball a little bit. I think that's a positive. I'd come on for that.
Dave, the guy's a glorified special teamer. They're not doing anything with Nall. Get out of here.
I'm not coming on if you sign another wide receiver, so just make that clear, okay?
Okay. All right. So Ryan Nall, tell me all about his value according to Dave Wannstedt.
No, well, I think you mentioned it. He's a core special teams guy, which means he's one of the four best. He can do it all. Those guys are valuable. And number two, if you put him in there and you want to run some running plays, some lead plays, he's your fullback. And now he can release, and he's got enough ability to make a catch in the flat. So I think the guy has value. I like it. It's very positive, I think.
See, Dave, our perception, though, is that Matt Nagy is going to get a chance to go full Nagy here, that he's gonna get a chance to just unzip it and just let it fly, baby, and pass the ball and do exactly what he wants with a new chosen quarterback. Don't you think he's going to have that kind of freedom stylistically?
Sure. Nick Foles can definitely do that.
Dave.
What?
Dave.
Let's go back to fantasy. Okay, let's go back to fantasy land. Okay.
All right, what do you want to talk about? All right, well, I want to talk about that position that you hate and don't think is important. You know, just indulge me here for a minute and let's talk about quarterbacks. Because I know you never had one, but Adam Schefter says that Russell Wilson has told the Seahawks he wants to be in Seattle, but if a trade were considered, the only teams he would go to are the Cowboys, Saints, Raiders, and Bears. That is according to his agent, Mark Rogers, who said that on the record to ESPN. So, you know, we could talk Ryan Nall, or we could talk about the Bears trading for Russell Wilson, Dave. I'm very excited about this possibility.
If we got a little Earth, Wind, and Fire for a little background music, I'm all in on talking Russell Wilson coming to the Bears. There we go. Yeah.
Dave, he's not happy in Seattle, and the Bears are on his short list. Let's go. Let's live in this fantasy land here with me.
You know what? That would be fantastic. I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Fame player in Russell Wilson, obviously. That would be fantastic, and obviously he must have some connections, or his agent does, or something. Why he would have some interest in Chicago. So I think it's good. Now, do I think he's going to leave Seattle? I do not. I really don't. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, we couldn't figure out why he would want to play for the Bears, Dave, to be honest with you. Why would any quarterback want to play for the Bears when he could play anywhere?
Well, you know, the one that's kind of interesting in my mind, at least, is, you know, he's not – Dallas is going to sign – Dak Prescott. He's not going to go anywhere. But the New Orleans Saints situation is very interesting. I mean, they're a Super Bowl contender. They have a lot of weapons. Drew Brees, I know he said he's coming back, but, you know, who knows there? I mean, I can see where that would be an attractive place. And Chicago, I mean, there's no better football city than Chicago. You know, the whole situation I don't know. In my mind, there's a lot of question marks for Russell Wilson to stand up and say, that's the place I'm going to go, and that's the offense I'm going to run, and that's where I'm going to go to the Super Bowl and get another ring. I don't know. Is he thinking like Tom Brady? I don't know. You know, I mean, Tom Brady may have started something with these Hall of Fame quarterbacks, jumped to another team, and you know, the Bears going to promise them two or three receivers like they did with Tom Brady. Are the Bears going to adjust their offense to what Russell Wilson wants to do, like the Bucs did with Tom Brady? A lot of questions in my mind.
You know, Dave, the mind goes to the last time the Bears traded for a quarterback from Seattle, which was, I believe, 1997. And you were going into year five as the Bears coach, and the Rick Meyer trade happened. I was thinking about that the other day. Somebody wrote about it because we talk about this group, Pace and Nagy, coach. We talk about them going into this year like, oh, boy, we better do something. We better do something. And it led to them being it might lead to them being a little desperate. It might lead to all sorts of stuff. What was the feeling for you and that at that point, you and Rod Graves going into that offseason when you're going into your fifth year and you know you got to get something done at that point?
Well, you know, I mean, no one's going to believe this because obviously it didn't work out that way. But we did do a ton of homework, with Rick Meyer. I mean, I talked to Tom Flores. I talked to Larry Kinnon, who was the offensive coordinator there at the time. And they were running the I formation and play action pass. And I talked to people at Notre Dame. And, you know, we really felt like we did our homework. And Rick was excited about coming in. So, you know, the problem was what we ended up giving up was the problem. It wasn't signing Rick Meyer. It was just, that didn't make no sense. I mean, we gave up way too much, obviously, but we had our reasons for signing him, and we thought that we could come in and run the ball and play defense, and he could play action pass, and he was a pretty good athlete. So that was the thinking that went into it. The problem was what we gave up for him.
But it goes to show it's hard to know, right, Dave? It's just hard to know when you're not there with a quarterback every day whether he's really got it or not, you know?
Yeah, it is. And you know, one of the cardinal sins is, you know, if players are on the market and they're out there, the team that they're coming from knows more about them than you do, and there's probably something, you know, it may not be football. It may be an off the field or whatever, but you know, sometimes we all have a tendency to think that we can get this player and we can coach him better, or we can get this player and we can straighten out his personal life, or we can make him, you know, a better football player and a better person. And that doesn't happen very often at all.
You know, Dave, it was interesting. There was a story that came out today. It was, you know, 10,000 words, three different reporters working on it. We had one of them on in the last hour. And it talked about, like, why the relationship between Seattle and Russell Wilson has deteriorated. And one of the biggest things is Pete Carroll believes in, you know, winning the turnover battle, running the football, time of possession, and defense. And Russell Wilson wants to air it out and, you know, be the superstar quarterback, throw the ball a lot, and he wants to be Drew Brees and Pat Mahomes and guys like that. And obviously a lot of your football sensibilities obviously would align with Pete Carroll's, and mine would maybe align more with Russell Wilson. But if Russell Wilson's this first ballot Hall of Famer and a top five quarterback in the NFL, like, why wouldn't you want to let him throw the ball more?
Well, you know, and I'm a Russell Wilson fan, and let me just put that out there. And it would be phenomenal if he decided to come to the Bears and they worked it out. Okay, I'm on board there.
Yeah.
But look close at this season, fellas, at Seattle. When they were pounding the football early, they were winning. When they had some injuries and they kind of abandoned the running game and they started throwing it, all of a sudden the turnovers came and they were horrible on offense. So I think you need to take a good close look at that. And every quarterback, you know, wants to throw it, you know, 45 times a game. But I think Russell Wilson is most effective and their team's most effective when they have a running game with Chris Carson and those guys, and he's play action passing, he makes his own plays. But he's been hit and sacked more than any quarterback in the league in over a X amount of time. I don't know what the years are. So how does a great athlete – is their offensive line that bad? You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think you talk to a few of those guys out there. I had a couple of those offensive linemen on the radio, and they didn't like the comments about him being hit, and he wanted to change things. Tom Brady was getting hit. And what the hell did he say? He says, don't throw the ball to Gronk. Put him in here and let him block. And let's run the ball, and I'll complete some passes. And that's what Tampa did, and they won a Super Bowl. So, you know, we can debate this thing all day. But I think at Russell's age, he needs a running game. He really does. I mean, if he wants to win, that's just my opinion.
It's great
stuff. If he wants to have a good defense, you know.
Yeah, hey, no, it all helps, obviously. You know me, Dave. I'm just so desperate for the Bears to get a good quarterback. I'd trade you. I'd trade anything.
Yeah.
Don't take it personally.
Danny's ready to give up everything, Coach. He's ready to give up three first-round picks and any two players on the Bears for Russell Wilson. That's Danny's first offer to Seattle, Coach.
Sure. You know what, Spiggs? Yeah. By the way, why'd you have to bring up that Seattle stuff, Spiggs? Okay, but anyway, on another side note, okay?
It's an excellent question.
On another side note,
sorry.
Sign Russell Wilson, give up three first-round picks, and you'll win the press conference. There's no question. It'll be the best thing that happened in Chicago. You'll win the press conference. Everybody will walk off, and you guys will have a great show that day. And, you know, now you got to put the helmet on and buckle it up and go beat the Packers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And the Bears would have a fighting chance because they'd actually have a quarterback.
I don't question that.
I know you don't. All right, now listen, we got you on under like false pretenses. Yes, the Bears signed Ryan Nall. Yes, this Russell Wilson story is real. But really, we've just been desperately looking for an opportunity to call you on your vacation so you can tell us about what it was like to go deep sea fishing with Jimmy Johnson. We saw the pictures on Twitter, but I want to know, what did you catch? How many Coronas or Heinekens were consumed? Give me every detail.
Well, I'm going to disappoint you. because we got on there and it was a little bit too rough to really do any, and everything with fishing, deep water fishing. And I'm talking about if you're going out 30, 40, 50, 60 miles, okay? If you're, you know, we're not talking about lake fishing or backwater fishing. If you're going to do some deep water fishing, that's where you got to go. And everything is predicated on the wind, you know, obviously, which affects the waves in the water. So we did not really get into that, but we caught a heck of a lot of Heinekens. I mean, God, they were biting for 2 days. The Heinekens. We had one on every line every time we threw in. We never missed on the Heinekens, and we laughed. I tell you what, we laughed so darn hard, and we were. And Tony Wise was down there with us, and other couple other guys I won't get into, and we were laughing so hard. I mean, it was hilarious. It was a great time.
Did you ever see Ditka?
No, not yet. You know what? Joey DeBono was by the house from Tofano's last week. He's back in Chicago now, and he's coming down next week, and I'm going to meet him out there at Old Florida where Mike belongs and spend some time with him. But he knows that that I'm coming out. But I have not seen Mike yet, no.
Okay.
You can't drop a couple other guys who I won't get into without getting a follow-up question here. Coach, I mean, like, are we talking Tony Wise? Or are we talking bigger celebrities than that?
Tony was there. He was my driver. You know, he was the driver. He was good. But, you know, we spent the night, and Jimmy was up at 4 o'clock the next morning. You know, I mean, he was up and just seeing, testing the water and the waves and the wind and doing his thing, getting ready to go. And it was just one of those weekends. So
sounds like a great time, just catching Heinekens with the boys. Dave, thank you. We'll talk to you about Ryan Nall sometime soon, okay? Thank you.
Yeah, the Heinekens were biting. See you guys.
Hey, Coach, yeah, I'm sorry I brought up the Seattle stuff. My bad. Never again, I promise.
It was terrible. Texter had it right. Your question about the Holocaust to Flew LeBorg was the question of Rick Meyer to Dave Wannstedt.
Yeah.
Why do you got to do that?
I've been noticing the parallel between going into the final year for Wannstedt and like the desperation to do something for quarterback and the desperation for Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace in the final year. You get it. And I was trying to ask it in a way that Dave could talk about the feelings involved and maybe relate to these guys. And that's not the way that he took it. No, he took it as an opportunity to explain himself for a very difficult moment in transaction history.
I will ask a confrontational question. You will ask a derailing question. It's a different, newer type of interview situation.
It was the Holocaust comp. It really was.
It really was.
Texter absolutely nailed it. It was this week's Holocaust question.
That's a fun segment. We could play the game of what will Speaks' Holocaust question be to the guests. I can't think of anything wrong with that.
Let's see. What is the thing that the guest would least like to be asked about? And then Speaks goes down that path. Somewhere between minute 9 and minute 14 of the interview.
After we've gotten the newsworthy questions out of the way. But you also do it with just like fun guests. You do it with a comedian and Dave Wannstedt. Let's talk about your biggest professional failures. That should be fun and entertaining. Well, we're not paying you for this appearance. It's in your off season. You're down in sunny Florida. Yeah. Let's talk about the losing you had. Hey, oh, wait, this trade led to you getting fired? Let's bring that up.
Yeah. I can't deny any of that.
I wouldn't want you to. Hey, this goes against my better judgment, but I'm going to reward that question. But it is time to talk about your beloved game of baseball because Chris Bryant is being downright honest, and a baseball player disagreed with Bernstein. I like both of those things. You'll hear it all coming up. Parkinson Spiegel on The Score. Parkinson Spiegel on The Score. Shane Tanney here. We are hanging out with you. And Ian Happ was on with Bernstein and Rahimi earlier today. Texter said Layla made comments about my lack of ability to grow facial hair. I didn't hear it. This is the first time hearing about it. But whatever she said, I agree with. Because it's true. I cannot really grow facial hair. So unless she said Danny can grow a great beard like Craig Kimbrell, she is well within her right to criticize my facial hair growing ability. sight unseen. I agree with her. I haven't even heard it.
And we welcome other shows talking about us in whatever way they would like to. It's totally fine. Since you mentioned Bernsey and Ian Happ, what a delightful exchange they had on a specific baseball stat. Oh, my God, was that glorious. But I wanted to mention real quick, just heard that music coming in. If you're like, man, what was that? That sounds really good. I like it. If you've ever had that kind of moment in your life where you're listening to this show and you're like, damn it, Chris Tannehill plays some good stuff. What is it? First of all, that was Beck. Second of all, every track that Chris Tannehill plays coming back from break, and a lot of them that are in the opens, are now gettable on Spotify. If you search for Parkins and Spiegel on Spotify, you will find a playlist with every single bump from the day's show. It will continuously be built day after day after day, and you can search by day that the songs were added and discover a whole bunch of new music or confirm what you thought you liked or whatever. So very excited about that Tanny and Shane have set up. Get involved and listen to the music that way.
And I love the song. I do. It's got a great beat, and it's a lot of fun. I like the way they sing it.
So we got to start syncing Chuck Swirsky dancing videos to every song Tanny uses for the show.
The Swirsk dance videos, they need further examination, probably by a psychiatric professional. But so I don't know if there's ever been a human being with less rhythm who also cares less about it. Like, that guy is awesome.
I think we are well aware of Swirsk's lack of rhythm with the songs that he records for us. We're well aware.
That was a combination of hip-hop and salsa.
I would disagree about the rhythm. I mean, the moves could be argued with, but in terms of the flow, it does bear more examination. I feel like Swirsk is feeling it. I mean, whatever he's feeling is certainly up for debate, but he's feeling something.
That rhythm's choppier than the Gulf of Mexico in a hurricane.
That's deep.
That's excellent. I haven't hung out with it enough to just count. Like, I should watch and just be like, all right, let's see if I can count to four, like a bar of music, Danny. There's usually four beats. Not always, but usually. And see if it has any rhythm. I'll have to check it out a little more.
I like mine with lettuce and tomato, Heinz 57 and French fried potatoes.
It's just glorious. Everything about that man is glorious.
He's so happy. He's so happy and so positive. He's relentless.
Oh, my God, yes. My career is going right down the tubes.
Speaking of happiness and positivity, Dan Bernstein, he had Ian Happ on today, and there was an exchange about the old RBI, and the analyst challenged the ball player, and the ball player challenged the analyst. It was fascinating. Here's the exchange.
I have to say, listening to the most recent Compound podcast, you got me going as a sports fan, and I've been waiting for this opportunity. Anybody who has listened to me on the air for low these many years will understand why. So, correct me if I have this wrong, but when Zach Short was talking about Miguel Cabrera and being in camp with the Tigers and standing around and watching him take BP, you three were discussing 2012 when Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown. And you said that was the only year, and correct me if I'm wrong, you said that was the only year that it was okay that Mike Trout didn't win MVP, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, people know that season, my radio partner at the time, Terry Bors, and I argued all year and up until afterward and through it the entire time, I insist that Mike Trout still should have won MVP.
No.
He was the better baseball player and was the better offensive baseball player, even taking defense out of it. This is a hot button for me, Hap. And because now that we understand weighted runs created plus, we understand how that handles run environment and park factors and everything. Mike Trout had a weighted runs created plus of 167 to Cabrera's 166. Mike Trout was a 10-win player. Cabrera was a 7.3-win player. I know that's positional per fan graphs, but I will die on this hill.
I love your passion. If somebody wins the Triple Crown, they're automatically the MVP. There's no question.
No, that's arbitrary.
Yes, Ian. Yes. Speak on it.
To lead the league in batting average, home runs, and RBIs is near impossible. The what metrics do not bring into play is how difficult it is and what a skill it is to drive and run.
Oh, that is ancient and arbitrary. You can pick any stats.
Nope, driving in runs is not luck. It is skill. It doesn't matter how many opportunities you get, how good your team is. Driving in runs is hard, and it's undervalued. The fact that Anthony Rizzo drives in 100 runs every year is not luck. It is a skill. It is very difficult to do, and it should be valued far more than it is. And the fact that in that ballpark, Miguel Cabrera, and I think there's a stat out there. I don't know where it is. You would have to – our research team might be able to find it, but they're not on the phone right now. I think in that season, Miguel Cabrera hit more balls that should have been or would have been home runs at other ballparks than any other guy in baseball. Like, we watched last year, Anthony Rizzo hit a ball 425 feet and get caught at the wall. Like, that park is so difficult to hit in with such tough conditions early in the season. The fact that he did it in that ballpark is incredible.
And weighted runs created plus reflects that and takes their park factor is taken into account in that particular statistic. And the with RBIs, as we now know, are in large part a function of your teammates on base percentage. It's essentially your batting average and your teammates on base percentage. It's not entirely luck, but that is one stat that has more luck than other stats. And defense matters in winning. Defense matters in how good someone is at baseball. I would love to hear the counter argument on that. Defense matters, and Mike Trout is a generational defensive player, and Miguel Cabrera at that point in his career was bad at it.
I do not disagree that defense matters and that it's important, but I do not agree with how it's evaluated, and I think that it's very subject to position and also we don't have a perfect system, and then it's gotten better every year, but definitely that year it was not developed enough to be able to accurately depict how impactful a player is on defense.
Well argued.
Trout is an incredible outfielder. He's an incredible defensive center fielder, but that should not be the difference between the MVP and not the MVP.
He was the best player in baseball that year.
I agree with you.
Now.
By the way, I agree with you. I think that anytime the phrase triple crown is even uttered in the same sentence as somebody, it's with massive respect. The fact that it hadn't been done since Yaz kind of said it all to me. I don't know that it's going to be done again in this modern MLB and how it exists. If you had to explain to Dan how hard it is not just to drive in runs and hit home runs, but to hit for average together, what would you say to him right now, Ian?
I'm right here.
It's unfathomable. I don't know that it will ever happen again. If it does, that person should win the MVP regardless of war. I firmly believe that. And that watching the way Miguel Cabrera played that season, how good he was, the fact that down the stretch with the Triple Crown on the line that he was able to complete it and walk away with the Triple Crown, that's like – I can't even process doing that, especially at that ballpark.
I thought it was great. And people are like, oh, Dan's being so mean. Like, they've had Ian Happ on 20 times. They have a relationship. Dan listens to his podcast every week before having him on. Dan does a great job with those interviews with Ian Happ. And I'm not saying that Layla doesn't, but Dan has had Happ on since before Layla joined the show regularly. So they have a relationship that allows them to argue it in that way. I guarantee you Ian Happ did not hang up the phone and be like, what a jerk that Bernstein is. That was just great sports debate. What I would say, and I know you're more passionate about this than I am, is – I feel like two things can be true here. Like, RBIs absolutely can be a stat that is dependent on your teammates, but it can still be undervalued as a skill, right? Because there is pressure of hitting with guys on base that is different and not quantifiable because of the human element and maybe how the defense is defending you because of guys being on base. Like, of course, guys who have more guys on in front of them are going to hit for more RBI, but that does not mean that everybody who is up with guys on base would be able to drive in runs in the same way.
Absolutely.
Because it is, in fact, a skill.
Absolutely. To your first point, and to anybody who thought that was like awkward in any way, it's freaking glorious that a ball player versed in statistics and intelligent and passionate like Ian Happ, a hitter, is able to have that kind of debate. That's a dream. You want that. For guys who've covered the game and think about it this way, what a phenomenal opportunity. So that's tremendous. And what Hap is responding to is something that triggers me all the time, which is the willfully dispassionate approach of Burnsy for decades and many others in dismissing RBIs because of the problems with the stat. There are problems, of course. Yes, it is dependent on other people being on base. Yes, it is dependent on other factors. But that doesn't mean it's not a freaking skill. It's an unbelievable skill to do it. And the point from Hap to me is that having success when runners are on base is not just a product of the hitter being the exact same level self with the happenstance of base runners being there as a bonus. You know what I mean? Hitters change to suit the situation and opportunity, and some are way better than others, like Rizzo or Jose Abreu or guys who rise to it. And in that, when Ian's defending that and talking about RBIs, he's really talking about clutch a little bit. He's talking about humans rising to meet the necessities of the moment and how so many guys do not. And when a guy does that, it should be freaking celebrated. So you could argue merely doing RBIs as a counting stat is a problem. You could argue, as people were with me on Twitter today, that looking at RBI rate, the percentage of guys on base that you've driven in, including yourself, that would be more useful. And I'm open to that. But in terms of what we have, I look at it this way, Danny. That year in 2012, Miguel Cabrera had more than 100 more plate appearances than Ian Happ with runners on base. Okay? More than 100 more plate appearances. That includes walks, which Trout had more of and everything. And Trout's...
Then Trout. You said that Ian Happ.
Trout.
Cabrera had more than Trout, yeah.
So Trout had somewhere around 200-some plate appearances, and Miguel Cabrera had 300-plus plate appearances with men on base. Trout's OPS was 916. Miguel Cabrera's was 993. So that includes walks, and it includes hits and slugging, and what it is... Miguel Cabrera was way better with guys on base in terms of driving them in. So, you know, RBIs matter, and success with men on base matters greatly. And I love when the practitioner can argue with the analyst, because it's very rare that the practitioner is available to do so. And I think usually the analyst, in terms of Burnsy, is not going to back down, is not going to change. And so I asked him a philosophical question today via text, Danny, and I'll ask you. Is there ever a point where the practitioner telling you that it's harder will weaken the theory of the analysis? The opinion of the practitioner, will that weaken the theory of the analysis? Does it ever come possible where you're like, oh, okay, well, that guy actually does it, so who the hell am I? Let me just shut the hell up.
Well, I don't think that I was with you until, like, who the hell am I? Just shut the hell up. Like, I mean, it's the man in the arena argument, right? Like, they've actually done it. And so, of course, their experience with it should be weighed. But, like, what if instead of Dan Bernstein making that argument against Ian Happ, it was Theo Epstein? Would you be like, well, Theo, you've never done it, but your brilliance and your analysis and your analytical team tell you one thing and the player tells you the other. So, but just listen to the player. Like, of course not. That would be ridiculous. Like, front offices often do not have people that played the game at the highest of levels, and they are using their numbers and their analysis to make all sorts of decisions and conclusions about the game. So I would say, Haps in the arena experiences should be counted and should make you reconsider your purely analytical position, but not dismiss them entirely and shut the hell up as to your conclusion.
Okay, no, and that is fair. And it's funny because when I tweeted that question today, Infield Fly Girl tweeted to me, I have actually birthed offspring, but I would not trust my gynecological advice over that of an experienced medical practitioner who had not. And I was like,
excellent point.
All right, okay. That's a good point. I thoroughly admit that I relish the few opportunities when a player reminds the dispassionate that being a strong human matters. You know what I mean? And being a strong human, and clutch freaking exists. And I think, I don't know if Burnsy still is a full-on clutch denier. He was for a while. But I think we can all agree that choke exists, that people choke under pressure. Clutch is the absence of choke. If you want to call it that, fine. But the ability to drive in runs with circumstance is a skill, and some are great at it, and I love when a player has an opportunity to talk about it. Just phenomenal sports content there. From
worst person, the anti-clutcher or the anti-vaxxer? Probably the anti-vaxxer, right?
I think the anti-vaxxer is endangering people's lives and is okay.
Right, and this is just sports?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Then Dan's fine, because he's a pro-vaxxer. So even if he's anti-clutch, I don't really care. It was really good stuff on the Bernstein and Rahimi show. Sounds like Chris Bryant's getting comfortable. Hopefully it leads to a good season. Next on the score.
It seems like the talk every year is like, is this the last hurrah? Is this it? Like, it is a broken record every single year. I don't know what to say. I mean, I just kind of go back on what I've said in the past and use that. I don't have anything else to add. We are a lot of really good friends here, not just teammates, but really good friends and good people. And I just enjoy taking the field and being here alongside these guys every day. So never taking that for granted, and I won't start now.
Chris Bryant meeting the media down in Arizona. Cubs and White Sox spring training continues. Game's just a couple of days away. Want to play a couple of clips here from KB, who one of the stories of the offseason was, does he not love the game as much anymore? And of course, his potential last year with the Cubs, the trade possibility, contract extension. There's a lot of business of baseball circulating around any conversation with Chris Bryant. There he's talking about guys who he's friends with, like Schwarber and Yu Darvish, departing. But KB did take note, Spiegs, on some of the teams in the National League who are spending big money this offseason.
Upsetting? I don't know. I don't think that's the right word. You look at the Dodgers, and they got lots of money over there, and they just won a World Series too, so they're doing fine. Padres, pretty cool to see a team like the Padres step up and, you know, make big signings and trades, and, you know, very exciting, you know, time for their fan base. They got some really good players, but there was a point where this team was doing that too, and I'm sure it will happen in the future. I don't know why I'm not privy to those conversations or any of that. I don't know what the direction or what they want to do. I'm just show up and play and do what I do here, and I'll let that stuff take care of itself.
So, yeah, Chris not really commenting on what has been an awkward offseason. Very interested to hear from him, by the way, after the way things went last year and a lot of the talk in the offseason and the way that he had spoken on a podcast and at different times and reacted on Twitter to people saying he'd lost the joy and that kind of thing. So very interesting to hear from Chris right now.
Well, he also was confronted with some of those rumors specifically, and he made mention of that as it related to the Mets today.
I guess I'll tell you what happened this offseason. I guess there was something that came out saying I'm going to get traded in 48 hours, and obviously that was completely wrong.
Mets won?
What's that?
The New York Mets won or something
yeah,
else?
Yeah, so I got a text like that weekend, welcome to the Mets. So I'm like, oh, well, what? It was a Connecticut number. I have no clue it was. So then I obviously called my agent, and he calls them and he said there's nothing going on. So that's the kind of stuff that I feel like is nice to know when there's something that's completely false. And, because at the end of the day, we are all human. And sometimes that when you get a text that says something like that, it's like, that might kind of mess with me a little bit. But I I've been answering these questions for 3 years now. So if there's, I guess maybe I've added more content for you guys, but go back to all the other stuff I said in the past and you can go ahead and write all that. But, I think I'm in a really good place in terms of dealing with that stuff now. And there's really nothing, else to say for me to say about any of that.
Wow.
I love that, man. Good for him.
Oh, man.
Good for him. That's open. That's honest. That's raw. Judge it if you want. Seems like a guy who's comfortable in his own skin. And, yeah, of course, that would suck to be confronted with of, hey, welcome to the Mets. And then, of course, you're not traded to the Mets. I don't care how much money you make. You got a family. You're a new dad. You got a wife. You've established yourself. You're a hero in this town in the sports culture. And then that's all out there. It's part of the business. It's part of what he signs up for. I don't feel sorry for him, but it doesn't mean it would be easy to deal with.
Yeah, man. It's interesting because as you're talking about and you're saying, people can judge it if they want and stuff. I like to try and identify what it is, void of judgment, if we can. And what it is brutal awkwardness of a situation that he's now dealt with for three consecutive years. Horrific. Who's doing that to him from a Connecticut number? Man, that's brutal. That's mean-spirited if it's somebody, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of media in Connecticut. Espen, a lot of media out there, and I don't know, you know, who's doing that. That's an evil thing to do if somebody's messing with him. But, you know, it gets to him. And it gets to people. It just does. Like, you can comment on that and see it, and that doesn't mean he's soft. It doesn't mean he should buck up, and it doesn't mean that it's fair either. It's just, it is what it is. I will forever think, Danny, that he would have been better served by as a person, just by the nature of who he is, by signing an extension a couple years ago. Like, a lot of people have done it.
Sure, I agree.
You know, right? Just like a lot of people have done it, buy out your arbitration years, buy out your first couple years of free agency, get yourself $150 to $250 million of security. I think he is a personality who would have been better served to have done that. And he would have enjoyed himself these last 3 years and maybe the next two or three more than he is now. And I think that he and his agent made a mistake in diagnosing, you know, what was going to be best for him. You know, and maybe look, his buddy Bryce Harper played it all the way out and went all the way to the end, and he got a $300 million deal, and I'm sure Chris thought that he was gonna, and maybe Scott Boras thought he was gonna, and I don't think he's going to, but you know, that's just not the best methodology for everybody, and I don't think it was the best methodology for him personally, from what I can see.
I totally agree with that. I think it's undeniable. I think it's a product of who his agent is and his early success, because based on his early success, if it continued down that path, the prudent business decision would have, of course, been to let it play out, to cash in for maximum dollars. And I think sometimes you either get bad advice or you get the advice that you want in the moment and you don't know that it's bad advice.
Correct.
Right? Like, he makes the decision. Of course I want free agency. Of course I want a $400 million contract. And then an injury happens, and then the numbers slump, and then the pressure melts, and he deals with failure for the first time. But now it's too late, because now the value is down and you've already chosen the fork in the road and you can't go back, and then the pressure just mounts exponentially.
Yes, of course I want that. Of course this is the right thing. Of course I'll be fine with this. Of course I'll be strong enough to deal with it. Of course it won't get to me. Of course I'll continue to have success. You know, all of that. And then you realize, freak, man, this game's hard. And dealing with it day to day, and dealing with all this stuff and all this talk before and after every game of a 162 game season, let alone the offs, it's a lot. It's a lot, man. And so I don't fault him necessarily. It's like between the two of them, you know, we all have agents. If you're in a business where you need an agent, then you have an agent and you talk about stuff and try to figure it out as best you can. And I think if he had a do over, I bet he'd take it. In my opinion.
I agree. I agree completely. But hopefully for his sake, honestly, he has just reached whatever it'll be will be, and he's comfortable, and he certainly sounded comfortable there. And, you know, frankly, the Cubs could use him to have an amazing April and May and June so he could rebuild a little trade value, so they could trade him at the trade deadline instead of just losing him for a draft pick, because it's going to really suck if they have to just lose that guy for a draft pick. I know that's what you think is going to happen. At this point, it does seem like it's the most likely outcome. But man, for their sake and for the rebuild's sake, I hope they can get more than a draft pick for Chris freaking Bryant. The story of the day that I still can't believe became the story of the day. Next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.